Jackson's Show on Wolf Spirit Radio. Simon actively encourages you to post your questions live to him in the chat room at wolfspiritradio.com/listen. When you ask a question in the chat room, please make sure that you've logged into the chat and go. That's the set name at the bottom, that you have a nickname, and that you ask one question in all caps. That makes it easiest for us to collect. Thank you. The next 2 hours will be full of debate, interview guests, and up-to-date news. Please join Simon and play an active role. Connecting Consciousness Show. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. Oh, yes, you are. And this is the Connecting Consciousness Show with Simon Parks. Good evening, Simon. How are you doing today? Yay, yes, yay, Simon and JP, it says here. So now you can tell the delay, because you'll hear this, everybody will be hearing this in about 2 minutes' time. So, shall we, well, first of all, do you have any special announcements that you want to make first?
Whether they were going to play their trump card. We've had the run-up to this through the economic situation generally. There have been a number of meetings, and Friday just gone, the key members of the International Monetary Fund had a meeting with the Fed. Prior to that, there had been a meeting with the Mergavinian family. These are the family that can sort of trace back through Venice and other very illuminated places, who represent individuals of great power, physical power in terms of money and possessions on this planet. And for those who are following the news, they would have recognized that it was an incredibly important moment, because both the president and the vice president met with representatives and the Fed Bank. This is the first time in the United States of America's history that both the executive and for British people, that means the president and the vice president, met with the Fed. That's never, ever happened before. The reason they were meeting was because they had been given the heads up on an ultimatum coming their way. And the ultimatum runs along these lines, that if the Fed don't play ball with China financially, then they're in for a bit of a pasting, as we say in Britain. So I need to explain what's going on. This Wednesday coming, if I'm not mistaken, the new gold-backed yuan goes live. So this is not just China, but it's backed by India and Russia and a couple of other countries as well, which aren't as influential, but nevertheless are within the European sphere. One third of the world's gold is now backing the yuan. So the yuan currency literally has 33% of all of the known gold on this planet behind it. The deal to the Fed is this. If they allow China to buy United States dollars, not all of them, but a proportion of them, they will buy them in gold, so they will exchange. So you give me your worthless paper dollars, and I will give you the equivalent in gold. And not only will I do that, but I'll do it at a 10% discount for you. The object being that over a period of time, the dollar is destroyed. But it's destroyed in a gentle way, which has far less of an impact on the people of North America, and indeed the Western world, or any currency that's not gold-backed. So that's the offer. Now, if the Fed refuse that offer, then what will happen is China will basically buy as many dollars as it can off the open market in gold and not put them back into circulation, so that it becomes apparent to all of the not just the senior money men and women, but the middle ranking people, that the dollar is destroyed. Nobody's going to trade in the dollar because it's not gold backed. Now the issue, of course, is for the Rothschilds, because up until the 1930s, many Western countries were gold backed. And then the Rothschilds were instrumental in removing the gold backing system and moving to this paper system of no value, which allowed money people to pull off great big stunts, which we've seen ever since then. But what China's doing is going back to the gold standard, and they're offering the Fed the chance to go back onto the gold standard, albeit not as an independent entity anymore on its own. Failure to do that, they've said, will result in the total insignificance of the Federal Reserve over the next year. So it's incredibly important. Now, they gave the people who really make the decisions in the West a few days to think about it. So this meeting to talk about the situation happened on Friday. And what the IMF were wondering is how, in goodness knows name, how they're going to cope with the situation. And they also wanted to know what the Americans wanted. Obama initially was saying, I don't want this during my election year. I don't want this side of an election. But my understanding is that they're basically saying that they want a decision prior to the election. In other words, they want Obama to make the decision, because they don't think the incoming president necessarily will be able to get his head or her head around the situation. So it's very, very important. What we should be seeing very, very soon is an increase in gold and silver bullion. A number of people in the know are already buying their gold and their silver. We should see a spike in that. So it's playing out. It's you know, I gave those dates, didn't I? June, July. And it'll be very, very interesting. We've got this big meeting in May, followed by the June, July situation. So financially, we could see a devaluation of the United States dollar around about the 30% mark, if they go for the number one option. If they don't go for the number one option and they go for all-out economic war, then I really don't know what that would do to the dollar. It would be worse than the 30% devaluation. So anyway, JP, that's the latest. You won't find that in the newspapers, but you might begin to see it leaking out on somewhere on the news. One of the organizations quite driven with this is what we call the White Dragon Society. The White Dragons are a financial organization based not just solely in China, but also have a strong commitment to redistribution of wealth. Yes, they want to protect China and they want to look after China, but they also have a bit more of a moral point of view. So you might be hearing more of the White Dragon Society in the weeks and months ahead. Right, JP, that's my news.
Okay, white dragons, red dragons, green dragons, blue dragons. That's the soya sauce, isn't it? Blue dragon. Anyway, meanwhile, let's go and find the large number of questions on this. All right, so I'm just going to find the right tab that's got all the questions in it. There we go. So, starting off from Poppy, just Poppy. Protecting ourselves. Love and blessings to you and JP. What are the best ways of protecting ourselves from the effects of Wi-Fi, smart meters, EMFs already? EMFs, etc. I already make good organite and use it. Ground myself while sleeping. Committed to personal development, detoxification. Eat well, exercise, try to live in the moment. Meditate lots. But I'm feeling really harassed by all the information that comes through all these mediums and do not always do well with the stress. I'm meeting more people now experiencing the same and living in hyper-alert mode as a result. Thank you for your care. Yeah, the hyper alert mode, that seems to be pretty common right in the last few weeks. It's like, yeah, everybody's on the edge of their nerves.
Right. Yes, it's a very relevant question. The obvious ones, first of all of you at your Wi-Fi or your wireless devices, try and have them away from you where you sleep. Try and ensure that they're not in the same room that you tend to spend most of your time with. You can download an app, and unfortunately I don't know what it's called, but if you go research it, you can download an app which you can put onto your phone, and it will read the energy strength of these devices and will tell you whether they're in the safe or harmful level. And that's actually a really useful thing to to do. You can go from room to room with that. It may seem very obvious, but when making mobile phone conversations, do not press the phone against your head. In the early days the phones came out, there was quite a lot of debate about skin cancer, and that suddenly disappeared as the big corporations thought that their billions of dollars of profit were going to be affected, and all of the scare stories as they were seen completely dried up. I know of a number of people who have had issues from holding the phone too close to their head. So when you have it on speakerphone, if you can't have it on speakerphone, do not press it up against the sides of your head. Right, you talked about Organite. It can work. There's no doubt about it. I've actually had seen a meter reading. Anything within a few centimeters, it's not too far afield, but a few centimeters of a properly constituted Organite device will reduce the strength of these emissions by 25 to 30%. If you have your piece of Organite with the metal coil in it and the shavings at the bottom, that will even reduce it by 50 to 75%. So it's not just the Organite on its own. One of the things that Wynne Keach and I have been looking on is the possibility of having a material that we could paint, for want of a better word, onto the backs of mobile phones, onto the backs of Wi-Fi devices, which severely reduced the emissions without affecting, you know, your wireless devices. It's one of the things that we're looking at as a very real possibility. So it's a really important question. Finally, just to finish off, do be careful of these new LED lights. I've actually got some here. On their own, they're absolutely fine, but don't, for heaven's sake, go down the road of these lights that have other circuits added to them to play your music or to do other things, because what's not clearly understood by the general public is that the light that is emitted from these ultra-advanced new technology LEDs are operating at the same frequency as Wi-Fi. Now, that can't be a coincidence, can it, JP? So you could potentially send a message through to someone's light bulb. And this is something that we've got to watch out for. And I did a talk in England, in Newcastle, just before the holidays, Christmas holidays, where I made people aware that, you know, you can get your app for your phone and you can play music from these ultra-new light bulbs. So your light bulb has an inbuilt speaker. Now, why on earth you'd want to play music from a light bulb, it doesn't matter, because the way many, many people are, they just want it. It's brand new. It's no one else has got one. I want that. The problem is that you are introducing technology into the house which doesn't just do what it says on the label. It might do other things as well. So, really good question. It sounds to me that you're doing everything that you can physically. What I'd like you to do is to go onto the internet and look and understand how Wi-Fi works and see what cladding or material you can obtain to reduce the Wi-Fi. When a device sends out a message, sends out a signal, it generally sends it in a radial way, like you drop a stone into a pond and it all ripples out. Well, if you don't want the whole house bathed in that, is there something you can obtain that will basically just keep it into a cone shape? So if you have, you know, your front room and your dining room and your hallway, and you could just have that protect it with your Wi-Fi field. But if you're in the kitchen, for instance, you have a screen of some sort, whether that's made of Organite, that you can actually move to reduce the rays coming into the parts of the place where you live. So do some research on that. Very good question. Thank you for writing in.
Yeah, it's very interesting. The we also use a material called shungite, which is graphene, fullerene.
It's a mineral as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a carbon... carbon-based mineral. It conducts electricity, weirdly, because it feels like a piece of stone or plastic. And it attenuates the hard edges. The problem with these things, you might have a 2.4 gigahertz signal, but it's square waves, and square waves create harmonics that go up octaves, 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 you know, far above the frequency. And that's what the problem is. It's those sharp edges. So the shungite attenuates those sharp edges, it softens them up, and it makes them sound more like a valve than a transistor amp, which is what I mean. It softens the sound. So it takes, it's like a tone control.
Right, well, there we go. So if our listener then sort of goes and researches that, then maybe she can obtain something that's useful.
Well, if she's in Britain, I don't know where she is, but if she's in Britain, she can contact me. If she's in America, she can contact Nancy. And I have some small squares of shungite, which have a sticky back to go on the back of the phone. But the thing that I do is I mix some, what is it? What's that white stuff? That glue, PVA. With shungite powder, and I painted it on the inside of the back of my mobile phone, and that's what I use to, and it's quite, it makes it, it feels quite solid and safe. So anyway, that's my solution to that.
Jolly good.
Okay, so Yvonne Hulin, with gratitude for your time and knowledge, do you have any knowing of Peter Frayne, Dynamo Magician Impossible? Could he be the new human some are talking about?
I don't know. I've never heard the name.
Okay.
Unfortunately, have not come across him.
Right.
It may be that the field he's in hasn't expanded into, you know, the field that I'm into. Had he done so, I would have had some knowledge. So I'm really sorry. I can't give you, and I can't go digging information for him, simply because it hasn't come to the fore. Therefore, I don't consider it important at this time. And that's not to mean that in 3 days or 3 weeks or 3 months it doesn't happen. I've had situations where I've been asked a question on the radio show and I've had no knowledge, and then a month later that person has come up in my life or something's occurred, and then I've done the research, if you like. But at this juncture, I can't answer that question.
Okay, so on a different plane, Simon from Ashley, can you tell us more about the elite's worship of Re, the sun god, and Ptah, the creator god, and how it will come into play for the big event? And what connection does Anu have to them? So, Re, Ptah, and Anu.
Well, all of the major religions in this planet have focused on that which brought light. The Egyptians, obviously, perhaps one of the key dynasties or civilizations that we can think of, although it's not exclusively with them. Some of the South American civilizations also very strongly. Because of the way a mammal is built, we are more active in the daytime than we are the night. Therefore, the sun was always seen as a metaphor for chasing away the dark. But it was about who was manipulating this propaganda story. We don't just have individual priests who get around and say, right, we're going to worship that great big golden orb in the sky. What actually happened was that somebody said to them, you know, this is representative of the god, and you see how it chases away the darkness, therefore you should worship it. So what's happened in history is off-planet entities have sought to join a connection between themselves and a physical happening on Earth. When I use the word primitive humans, I don't mean it spiritually, I mean it technologically. Many thousands of years ago, primitive technological humans didn't believe anything unless they actually physically saw it. And we really haven't moved on much today, have we? We're the same. We don't believe it unless we can see it, touch it, and even then we don't believe it sometimes. So what off-planet entities who were seeking to control and dominate civilizations or a civilization on this planet would be to connect themselves to a well-known happening, whether it's the eclipse of a moon, whether it's the rising of the sun, whatever that might be, and to say that that they were connected with that, so that there was this worship of a object which was celestial, which gave energy through, and because the entities had connected somehow to the priests, then they were able to draw on that energy. Throughout history on this planet, individual members of ruling elites off planet have sought to find a niche for themselves. So someone might say, I'm the sun god, I'm the moon goddess, etc., 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 all seeking to find a niche for themselves so they can obtain worship. And, you know, you have one god who is the overall god in the pagan system, and then you have all these lesser gods, but each god has his or her own niche. They're responsible for this and responsible for that. And so you can begin to see how much of this is copied from a real-time situation where members of a royal dynasty are given responsibility for certain things on the earth, and then to their followers or their worshippers, they are aligned with that object. In terms of Anu was the senior of prehistory and history itself, and therefore didn't actually align himself too greatly. One of the possible alignments would be with Zeus from Greek history, or Zeus became Jupiter in the Roman history before the Christian religion took hold. So the number one senior god would always be Anu, and then his representation, although he tended not to play that, he let others play that for him. His sons and those around the family who were seeking to be more dominant and to gain more power would push the agenda. And then they would then say, well, you know, this god is greater than your god, etc., etc. So, all linked. And when one religion fell out of favor, it was generally because the god, and I'm using the word in parenthesis, the god fell out of favor with the court they were in. And so when that god was deposed, therefore that religion was just disappeared. It wasn't to be worshipped. And that god would then be chucked out or thrown away from the court and then would go to another country on the planet and set up another cult, another group. So, you know, I've talked about it before, where suddenly we have this very advanced, technically advanced culture, the Incas, the Mayans, where sacrifice, particularly with the Inca group, was commonplace. The murder of a person, persons with a stone knife made out of volcanic glass called obsidian. And any sacrifice tends to be linked to these people. So, a really good question. But divide and conquer, divide and rule. So Anu would play one member of the royal family off against another, and then you would see that play out in the way it goes across. I mean, the reptilians are still to this day very angry with the Jewish race, because they believe that the Jewish race gave away some of their secrets. To do with the Ark of the Covenant and many other things. So originally, the Jewish race were connected to a very, very senior reptilian overlord, who then got very angry with the chosen race, using the terminology there, because he believed that some of the information was given away. So a very good question, so thank you for that.
That's begged another 28 questions. Anyway, so we'll find out later. Maybe what the beef with the Jews and the reptilians is. That's I've never heard of that. Anyway, from Dan Farmer. Simon, what exactly is CERN planning on bringing through with the Hadron Collider? Will they be attempting a false messiah takeover? And how are they able to put on such an innocent act without exposing their intent?
Well, The threat from the CERN collider is over. The serious threat is over. That was seen off. And, you know, thank you to everyone from Connecting Consciousness who participated in that group or worldwide meditation. The facts of that cannot be disputed because of the conference that I held in October. We actually had weather charts taken from satellites showing that a thunderstorm actually was right over the CERN facility at the time of the group meditation. So even the planet was coming to our aid, because there was a lightning strike which took out the number one generator powering CERN. So, you know, the individuals of Connecting Consciousness need to understand that they were able for a short period of time to connect with the consciousness of the planet, and for the good of the planet and for the good of all good people, the planet actually came to the aid of those who were trying to do some good. So the crime that was going to be committed wasn't committed, it was prevented. But the questioner is right to ask this, because there are other things of a lesser greatness that they wish CERN to do. CERN was a host of things. It was a huge experiment in the impossible. The impossible being trying to open a portal to bring in nasties, as we say in Britain, bad guys, as you say in the States, an attempt to bring in a whole army of evildoers. That was thwarted, and by CERN's professionals themselves, they admitted that a whole, 0.8 of a millimeter was punched into the fourth dimension. So if for nothing else, the benefit of CERN has been to prove that the fourth dimension exists. I know that scientists have proved it mathematically, but they actually have science now which shows beyond doubt that there is a fourth dimension, because they stuck a hole in it. The hole was only 0.8 of a millimeter. I don't know what that is in real money, 16th of an inch or something. Whereas what they wanted was one maybe 12 feet wide, so that they could literally import stuff. They did open a communication channel, because you can now communicate, or they can communicate between the third and the fourth, but that's all they can do. So that was the major objective of CERN at that time. And what these bad guys often do is they create a terrorist attack, or there's a loss of life somewhere on the planet at the same moment that they are seeking to boost power, because those souls who lose their physical body and die, their physical body dies, of course, but the pain and anguish felt, these bad guys can harness that pain and anguish and use it to elevate the energy that they're using. So we often see a loss of life somewhere on the planet when something else is going on of a technical nature. Because there's only so much electricity these devices can use. When they want the higher outputs, they have to go to the psychic energy. And when human creatures lose their life, there is for a short millisecond a massive burst of energy. And these guys know that, and that's what sacrifices is all about. It's using that energy. Anyway.
That's fascinating. That's what they call loosh, the distress. Right.
Yes,
of that is caused. So not only is it the distress of the actual event, but also the families that are focusing on that person, they can suck off that. They can hoover vacuum that off, can't they?
You are absolutely right. And that's why on television they will go round and publicly interview people who are families or friends of people who've lost someone, so that we can all then hear the terrible, terrible feelings of this person, and then millions of people over the planet quite rightly feel for that person. And then these bad guys can go and try and hoover up, as you say, that energy, so it's a second going around of it. To get back to the question, the object of CERN, because of its technology, because of the way it works, and because it's not actually very beneficial, it can be used or bent for many wrong purposes. So creating holes for bringing things in, literally a focused array. So it's like a phased array in many ways. It can bend and send energy as a beam. Not very good at altering weather, but slightly better at giving earthquakes, and we've had several earthquakes this last week. I'm sure some people are aware of it. Someone yesterday was as high as 8 on the Richter scale, although fortunately there haven't been any, you know, tsunamis from that. But there are huge numbers of earthquakes on the cards. Just want to let people know that, but not at the moment in America. So CERN isn't the threat it was last year, but it is still a threat. So thank you for that. It's a very good question.
Yeah, the old ring of fire is kicking off a bit. So now here's a very, very interesting question. This is from Buffy. Do you know anything about the May 23rd, 1948, when one single company gained control of all textbooks? How much information in mandatory education is false versus truth? Good question.
That's interesting. What I do know is that artificial intelligence, 1 year after the Roswell crash, sought to try to pool or coordinate information technology. Now, back in those days, information technology, of course, was the printed word. It was pamphlets, leaflets, and books. And after the Trojan horse of the Roswell incident, the planting of advanced technologies on the Earth, AI then started its long journey to control and manipulate information. One of the ways that you do that is that you have senior people in media organizations, and you then try to dominate all of the world's media or the themes of the media through that one portal or that one channel. So I have some knowledge of it. I couldn't tell you the company, but I am aware that in 1948 or 49, one of those 2 years, I can't remember which, but it was very close after Roswell, there was an AI move to try to place all or as large a portion of the printed word coming through one, not publishing house, but through one organization. So that person's very well read, haha. That's a really good question, and it's AI. It was AI-led, and AI is the problem.
I'm a Cinderella. Meanwhile, kind of slightly connected with this, from James, what is NASA's real purpose, and why do they keep giving us fake pictures and videos? Are there parts of space being covered with holograms?
Right. NASA's originally was set up as a cover, literally a cover to take away the general public's attention of space and focus it down a corridor that was completely media controlled. So if I want to raise vast amounts of money from a civilization, and America is a civilization, it's a huge country, it's like a whole world in itself. But if I want to raise money from it, then I'll need an organization that can promise you the moon. And so one of NASA's jobs was to dupe the ordinary, good, decent people of America and say that we are the organization that will, you know, sort this out and put a man on the moon. And, of course, Kennedy unwittingly was caught in on that. He wasn't knowingly doing that. He was played along. And, you know, you have an organization that then has all of the media at its control, whether it's a glossy magazine, Time Life, whether it's books, films, Walt Disney, whatever it might be, they've all pushed this agenda and made huge amounts of money. And what it also means is that they have a monopoly on space. They had a deal with the Russians, so the Russians would keep out and wouldn't contradict anything that NASA said generally. Although they did contradict over Phobos. The Russians had a completely different take on Phobos. But that's another story. So basically, NASA then could control everything, and through NASA, the National Security Agency, the NRO, National Reconnaissance Office, were then able to send up satellites, which were supposed to be communication satellites, but were, of course, very, very distinctly military satellites. Photographs were doctored and altered, airbrushed out. And so literally, if you want anything to do with space online, you know, you have to go through NASA. because NASA will be the ones that say to everyone, you can have this picture, you can have that picture. And so it was a very clever ploy to ensure that whether you were a big media company or just an amateur astronomer, anything that you got had to come from NASA. And it was only the vast amount of pictures coming in the 1980s, 1990s that swamped NASA, and therefore stuff was being released which hadn't correctly gone through. And I'll add to that, there were a number of people who were trying to alert the general public and were deliberately letting stuff go through. So instead of airbrushing out every one, they might airbrush out 99 and let the 100th one through. But in many cases, it was just literally the volume. The volume was so great that they didn't have time to check it, or they didn't expect anything to be in that particular planet or that sector or that quadrant. So that's why we've got a number of very genuine pictures from the Moon and Mars, which clearly show things that are not of this planet. So that's it, really. And when we have anything that goes on in space, NASA has a special link with the National Security Agency, and I know this absolutely for a fact because I know somebody who knows somebody who actually did that, and there's I think it was between 5 and 7 second delay on all communications whenever there wasn't anything from space, and there was literally a guy sitting there who could then just switch it off or cut into it and do all sort of things, so that the people on Earth who were listening those second delays through the main media couldn't pick it up. Now, ham radio people, if they had the right equipment, they would actually pick up those signals.
You go directly to the signal.
Undoctored, yes, exactly. But then, you know, if you start making that public, you'll get a load of people on your door. So, again, a really good question. So that was great.
Yeah, some good questions. Okay, all right. So here's something quite personal. Anyway, Simon, despite that it would be removed from the internet very quickly, would you ever be willing to make a video of you shapeshifting? Sometimes in videos, your face, and only your face, begins to look almost as if it had a low bandwidth. Is this shape-shifting, or just the camera quality, or actually that you've got a low bandwidth where you live? Yeah, that's probably mostly, you know, there's a whole load of conspiracies about everything, and, you know, like when we're doing shows, we get taken down, or perhaps it's just low bandwidth, you know, what we call artifacts of low bandwidth. Anyway,
to answer the
question, Simon.
It's actually a sensible question. It's actually a serious question with all the humour in there. Although I will have to say that I've done, obviously, in the last 6 years, I've done quite a few radio interviews and radio shows, and on a number of occasions, it has definitely been taken down. And when I did a TV interview, and the TV cameras were here, and this is a mainstream British television company, it's not, you know, one of the family group who are there to try to push the agenda. This is a mainstream TV company. And the guy was in my room at the top of the house, and he said, I don't understand that. He said, my batteries have just gone flat, right, on the camera. I said, fair enough, you know, that happens. He put in new batteries. He said, don't worry, I've charged all these up, the new batteries, and they didn't work either. They were all drained. And then he said, someone, and he's obviously a cameraman from a big television company, so he knows what he's talking about. And the actual words to me were, we are being jammed. He said, my wireless microphone is being jammed. Unfortunately, he had an old-fashioned analog microphone with a cable. So, not just mine, but many people who wish to challenge the authority and the elite, who wish to try and put a different picture to the general public, will from time to time have that interfered with. In terms of shape-shifting, I am capable of shape-shifting, yes, but not in the sense that David Icke would talk about. We have a number of groups here. When a reptilian takes a human overlay, and this is, of course, the bit that lost David Icke many friends, possibly or potentially because the way he described it accurately, but because he was very blunt and matter of fact about it, there were many people that was a statement too far. They would have been inclined to have been a little bit more careful with how you introduce that, but nevertheless, David did what he did, and I would never ever criticize David. I've got the highest regard for him. But basically, you can overlay a human. You can actually have the image of a human, but you're not. That is a full-bodied shapeshift, and that, for many humans, would be terrifying to see that. But for many, many people on the planet who have a sizable amount of reptilian DNA or a sizable amount of reptilian soul to them, they will be capable of changing their eye shape. That's actually quite common. There are people who can produce patches of scales, if they're reptilian, on their arm or their hand. That's not crazy, that's not off the wall, that's actually real and genuine and can be done. In most cases, it happens when people at least expect it. It's usually through high tension, there's something very important happening, or there's a lot of energy being released. Sometimes when people are being interviewed, excuse me, on television, and they're not very used to it, that can create a lot of stress, and sometimes they may get a change. But what I wanted to say was that that's immediately seen as evil and bad, and that's not the way to look at it. The way to look at it is to say that people have many, many strands of DNA connecting at the moment, and, you know, I want the 12 strands of everyone to be connected. And when you connect with a particular strand, you are connecting to that family member or family group, and therefore you could make a change that's like that person. So I've met people who, in old money, are 5'5" on Tuesday and 5'7" on Wednesday, which is physically not possible. But if they're connecting with a DNA strand and they are connecting with a family, their physical body will change. So it's not the shape-shifting that's wrong. There's nothing inherently wrong or evil with shape-shifting. It's the person behind it. So if Fred blogs, as we'd say in Britain, shapeshifts, does that make him evil? But if George W. Bush shapeshifted, might that be evil? So it's the person's value, the person's intent, and the history of that person. That's what's dangerous, not the fact that a person can shapeshift. So a fun question, but some serious points to it. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely, and thank you for being open like that. Hang on. I'm just reading this rather long question. Okay, that's okay. Because he mentions a person, and I was wondering if but this is it. So he's been following a friend on Facebook who needs to be mentioned, Mike Janich, or Dutch Sense, for his extraordinary work on exposing the governments around the world for using HAARP to create man-made earthquakes, such as Japan's 8.9 earthquake a few years ago. And the Bandar Aceh and the Chile's earthquake and a few. Fidel Castro openly pointed the finger at America for Japan's quake. My question is, how many of these endless quakes are man-made? Also, are these man-made quakes responsible for a massive tilt in the Earth's axis? I have noticed that about 1:30 p.m. the moon is out in the sky along with the sun. Is it normal for the moon to be visible at this time, or am I noticing something strange? So, HAARP, I think, is the basic one, or are the endless quakes man-made?
I think you can see, sometimes you can see the moon and the sun at certain times of the year. It is possible, but please consult an astronomer, but not an astronomer who's paid for by NASA. HAARP, more and more of the quakes are attributable to HAARP or HAARP-like technology. Yes. Just as the drought in California is being affected by HAARP, you see, if you bounce waves, you can actually force denser clouds, rain-bearing clouds, away. And what HAARP, I believe, is being used for is to prevent precipitation, to prevent water-bearing clouds occurring over the California region or part of the region. But if you then angle those, because we've talked about phased array, when you're working in digital, you can actually move without needing an antenna that actually moves. The antenna stays in its same position, but by altering the frequency, you can actually move the beam. If you send that into the ground, and there is a, let's say, a clay layer, or there's an unstable element, those waves will build up or bounce off as it, whether it's a clay layer or not, and you will form a vibration in a weakness. And if you just keep that going for a number of days and you build up the power, you can produce earthquakes. Now, I can't give you a number, but if I said more than 50% of the serious, and that's anything over 5 on the Richter scale, over 50% over 5 are coming from machine-created elements, I think that would be accurate. And that's huge. What is the purpose of it? They're still experimenting. So they will be setting off earthquakes in regions that aren't going to really cause too much harm, because what they're testing is what is happening to the Earth at that time. What is the resistance? What is the best way to modulate these beams? So a lot of it is experimentation. The questioner did mention Japan. There is an Illuminati history, that belief that Japan needs to be sunk under the water, all of it. And that was a real attempt to totally sink all of mainland Japan. There was an external interference, and that never occurred, but it did seriously harm Japan, because up until that terrible day, Japan had been a net exporter of products. Now it is a net importer of products. So as a world power, it was destroyed overnight. And people don't really appreciate that. You couldn't really do that to China or Russia. China, because China's so big and is not like Japan. Japan was an island. You couldn't do it to any of the possessions of China or Russia, because you would bring about a third world war. So what they tend to do with these devices is use them on countries that can't hit back. And when they want to make a example of somebody, so if a government doesn't do what the elite in the Western world want them to do, then they punish them. And in Japan's case, it was nearly the ultimate punishment. So it isn't just HARP, there are a couple of other devices as well, and there's a device actually orbiting the Earth, which they use as well. But yeah, another good question. Thank you.
Right, yeah, earthquake machines. I remember Fulford, you know, people put down Ben Fulford, but do you follow Fulford? Because a lot of the things that he's saying are the same things that you're saying, or are you both getting from the same sort of sources?
I don't really follow anybody, and that's not in ego or arrogance, simply because I have my own route to follow. The information that I get, it's Ben Fulford I think you're referring to, he's American, so he will be receiving information from American intelligence agencies, I would imagine.
He's Canadian, actually.
He'll still be American.
He's got the... He lives in Japan, and right. he speaks both Japanese, and he's connected with these, you know, dodgy organizers, the Yakuzas, the green, the black.
He involved in banking money?
He was in Forbes magazine. This is a banking magazine, isn't it?
It was banking, that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
All I can tell you is, as far as I'm concerned, he's genuine. He is genuine. I believe he might have been a CIA asset, and has a conscience. So I think he's a good guy, and I think that what he does come out with is probably worth listening to and acting on. But that's really all I know about him.
Yeah.
So I would say that Ben and I are getting the same information, but from different sources.
Good, because he's talking about these dragon societies and the red dragons and the white dragons and right. all of this stuff, and he's been talking about them for years and years and years. And everybody's saying, it's just all this info. No, but it always plays out the way he says it is. So
the white dragons are genuine. There's yeah. absolutely no question about that. There was an attempt to set up a counterforce, the red dragons, but the white dragons are the good guys.
Right, okay, so white is good, red is not good. Okay, so moving on from Japan all the way over to Italy. Cue the mandolins. Okay, from Filippo. Dear Simon, is Venice going to have an important role in the near future for the global agenda? Rumours say that the Republic of Venice will raise again, as there is an international interest for this to happen, bringing Italy down and restoring its borders as they were prior to unification with the other nations of the Italic Peninsula. I received news about a major event to occur during the summer that will change the local geopolitical map. It looks like a corridor from Venice and Austria through Slovenia and Hungary is shaping to join Russia. Only Ukraine currently is in the middle. What do you know about this? Thank you for your work. Filippo from Verona. A gentleman from Verona. How beautiful.
I think you're right on the button there, my friend. The elite, the Illuminati, have long had a very, very romantic attachment to Venice. It has been the home of many, many gifted and moneyed people. And there have been those who have harbored a strong desire to see Venice stand in its own right. And there are those in the Vatican, because you cannot talk about Italy, and certainly you can't talk about Venice without mentioning the Vatican. And our questioner didn't mention the Vatican. That's probably deliberate, to see if I would go there. The Vatican has two schools of thought. One half is, yes, it would be really nice to have Venice come up. But the second thing is that if you fracture a country, then you lose the power. The Vatican controls all of Italy. If you start having city-states that go their own way, then that can destroy your power base. However, if you were to align yourself with a city-state that then could align itself with a country with a gold-backed currency, you might be seen to be throwing the rest of your country to the dogs, but you yourself and your own principality survive. So in other words, if you know that the end is coming financially for many in the Western world, then why wouldn't you create a vehicle which could be a small town or a geographically defined area of great history, and align that as a separate state with the people who now have the ascendancy, and that might then buy your own freedom. So, you know, the Vatican might wish to try and get on the back of one of these. So the questioner has great knowledge. Most people haven't a clue what I'm talking about. He does. What I would just say to him is that what you need to understand is that the reason that money has left the Western world over the last 20 or so years and has been going to the East is not because these clever, tricky Chinamen have done this, done that, or done other. It is because the Rothschilds have deliberately raided the Western world over the last 20 years and have deliberately moved assets, stripped assets from the West and given them to China. Because when you are in commerce and trade, that knows no boundary. It doesn't matter to the Rothschilds whether their banking assets are placed in China or X, Y, or Z. What matters to them is that they survive a situation which could be catastrophic. So what they've done is they've moved the energy and the resources and the metals to China, and now China is the power. It's not the military power, but it's now the economic power. So we need to understand that much of what we're going through is manipulated, but what's happening is that it's been taken out of the hands. These people have manipulated a situation. It's like the question of what if Venice became an independent city-state and then went and joined somewhere else. People try to jump on the back of that and manipulate the situation. But there is a greater force, thank goodness. We could call it, you know, consciousness, the great creator, whatever we want, which seems to go along with it, and then suddenly, like a bucking bronco, throws the rider off. So just because the bad guys seem to be getting their own way doesn't mean they'll always get their own way. A really interesting question, so thank you for writing in.
Okay, so we're coming up to 5 minutes to the hour. Let's do one more question, and then I've got a song to play. So this is from Michaela from the CC Group in Germany. Hello. Hearty greetings from Germany to all, and thank you for your work, Simon JP, and all the beings beyond. My question, hello Simon, could you talk about the Evas, the female way, from your point of view? I have never heard of a contact that was made by the females from this or other universe's dimensions. Why? Why are the male beings making contact and no female? Do you know? Sorry, several questions. I did not mean man and woman. I mean the beings which experience the female way on planets and or dimensions. Where are they? Excuse my Dinglish. I hope I have expressed myself correctly. Love, Michaela D.
Well, first of all, thank you, my darling. It's lovely that, you know, we've got so many people in Connecting Consciousness who participate in many ways. And one of the ways is to, you know, ask a question, and hopefully, you know, we get a chance to talk about it. And, you know, your English is wonderful. I only speak one language, which is English. You, at least to my knowledge, speak more than one. So, you know, take my hat off to you. You know, so brilliant. Right, it's a misnomer. Now, there's a word for you, if your English is a second language. It's a misnomer simply because there are many, many beings that experience feminine. If we think of the constellation of planets and stars, which as a British person I pronounce as Sirius, but an American person would say Sirius, one part of that constellation has a very, very strong male energy. And the other part is incredibly feminine. And when I meet a person and they're from that star system, I will know based on the feminine or the masculine about them, which part, whereabouts they've come from. The thing is that the male is dominant at the moment, and will be for another few thousand years. But we are moving towards the feminine. And I personally don't like the fact that we are either a male in terms of these energies or female in terms of the way that the universe is working. It was much nicer to be more balanced. I'm not arguing for a unisex. I'm not arguing for, you know, non-male and female. I think that's very important, to be a male or female. But the problem is that males generally kill and females generally bring life into the world. And so we have a real problem, which nobody really in the mainstream media ever wants to discuss. You know, when's the last time anybody in mainstream media said, actually, it's mostly men that commit crimes. It's mostly this, that. And they just don't go there. It's all, we know it, but we don't really talk about it because people are frightened and scared to talk about the truth. And the point is that there's a combination of the way we are brought up on a planet and what we are expected to do and how the system thinks that we need to behave and what we are like inside. There is a lot of feminine energy working very hard for positive ways. The planet is feminine. This planet Earth has a feminine energy, and that's why the Catholic Church in the main attempted to burn as many witches as it could to remove women from the role of healing, from the role of teaching and guiding, and to replace it with male only. And we're getting women now into the church, but that's only because laws have been passed saying that it's, you know, it's not really right for one sex to dominate, although religion is actually exempt from that. But the churches have done it. But they don't give any power to the women. You know, when we get a woman pope, now that would be interesting. So all I would say to the questioner is feminine is much stronger and plays a much stronger role than you imagine. So I think that's it. And we need a break, don't we?
I think we do. And so in remembrance of the sun god Ray, here is Ben Harper with Here Comes the Sun. And And welcome back to Connecting Consciousness with Simon Parks. And there, did you see the listenership there?
Yes, I did.
Wasn't that interesting? It's lovely to see people all over there in New Zealand. No one in Japan, though. Anyhow, where do we go to? About 1,000. I have 1,000 windows open. One of them has... There we are. Here we are. Okay. Spirit Bunny. I have respectfully always tried to keep my questions very short and concise, my sole focus being on getting an interesting topic addressed while still helping the show move along efficiently and allowing others their opportunity to be heard too. I try so hard to keep it brief, but I don't even make room for pleasantries, and some might find my questions cold. I hope you both realize that there is much love coming from this point on the planet too, and I'm showing it with respect for the time and energy of all involved. And I'm actually not cold or insensitive at all. Oh. So, that was a sort of statement rather than the question. I'm sorry. But thank you, Spirit Bunny.
Well, had we ever said anything to the contrary?
I'm not sure. Maybe I've said these are really long questions all from the same person, but perhaps.
I think the thing is that anybody who listens to the show and takes the trouble to write in is someone that we value. And sometimes when a person has a very deep knowledge in a particular field, it's very hard for that person to encapsulate what they're trying to get across. If I had to ask a question on something I didn't know, I'd probably just do it in one sentence because I didn't have the knowledge. But if it's on a topic I have great knowledge for, then, you know, it's something that I might spend a lot of time doing. The difficulty is, of course, that this is a time-limited radio show. And if someone writes a long question, sometimes we don't have the time to answer it or read it through. That in no way is a reflection on our feelings or our evaluation of that individual. It's just simply a mechanism to try and get through as many names as possible. Because anyone who's listening to this show is going to be spiritual and a great asset to the planet. Thank you. Next question, JP.
Good, good. Now, here's a good one. From Jim, duality consciousness versus unity consciousness. Thanks for all you and JP do. Please discuss the difference between duality and unity consciousness. For example, ego identity is duality consciousness and source identity is unity consciousness. The soul experiences both, but is under the power of duality consciousness of the ego identity because the ego identity uses the energy of the survival instinct. Source identity recognizes that and understands that power, but provides its objective love to dissolve the duality of ego identity. The ego identity is not rejected, but loved to relaxation and willingly gives up its hold over the soul. And this is a long and difficult process. There must be a passion for the truth, a passion for source. All right. So that's another, I don't know. So that's his seed discussion that he wishes for there to be discussion and debate, as it says on the box.
Well, that's the primary reason for coming to this planet is because there isn't another planet anywhere else, and that's a big say, but it's a fact, where the human creature or the creatures that inhabit the human bodies have the opportunity to really know who they are and to make a decision. And I say this when I consult with people, you know, that 100 years on this planet is equal to 100,000 years anywhere else. If you learn your lessons, when we are faced with a situation here on the planet, we either run away from it, in which case we don't learn, or we face it, and then we then decide whether we're going to learn from it. If we learn from it, then we are advancing ourselves. And so the questioner is really asking about us as a living creature with one perspective, and leaving that one perspective, and then actually understanding that there is something much wider, that we play a role within that. We have to make a choice as to whether we exist for ourselves and are very isolated working purely for our own benefit, or whether we are prepared to step outside of that to embrace the fact that there's a greater need and a greater good and a greater connection, and whether we can embrace that and be part of that. So all of us, for a greater or lesser extent, are faced with that at some point in our lives, and for many of us it's an ongoing thing. And our evolution in terms of our development as our soul is whether we understand that and whether we can work towards it. And sometimes we take two steps forward and one step backwards, but as long as we're always trying to strive towards that. So it's not a question for any philosophers necessarily. It's a question for spiritual people, because you could go to university and study this for goodness knows how long and then write a dissertation, write a million words on the subject, but not understand why you're on the planet. Whereas you can give your last quarter or your last 10p to somebody who's genuinely hungry, or you can give blood to save somebody's life, or you can do something that benefits another person and doesn't do you any good at all, you have learnt more and demonstrated that you have learnt more about your role and the connection to the planet that you have than anybody who might have spent God knows how long, you know, writing a book on the subject. So everyone develops at their own speed. And, you know, you could sit in a room with a number of people discussing this for hours, and we don't have that. But it's a very good question. It's very in-depth and very, very detailed. But basically everyone has to make a choice on this planet. They either live for themselves or they live for others. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This is from Ingeborg from Germany. So, creating the future. Hello, Simon. This weekend I joined a seminar where a Russian female doctor taught us more technologies about... Grigory Grabovoi's The Teachings about the Rescue and Harmonic Development of the World. I decided to use this not only for my personal development, but together with my spiritual peace group, help mankind to regain our soul power and the freedom to live in peace and love and caring. I have a lot of ideas for healing, dealing with animals and plants, a new money system that leads to obviate the need for money, education, etc. But by listening to your sessions, I learned a lot about the others, the extraterrestrians, or and those of inner Earth, the benign ones, and the archons and those in between. And I'd like to ask you for ideas how we as transformed and loving people should meet and treat them. I believe that even the darkest archon is a divine soul and one day will turn to source. And what about AI. I know that our expectations, supported by meditations and the Russians' techniques, will create a morphic field. I want to be careful about my part of creation. Much love, Ingeborg.
One of the hardest questions to answer, actually. Because on the one part, my view is that when something is innately evil or seeks to conquer and destroy, and you go up to it and you extend your hand, it will chop off your hand. But the other part is, well, unless you show love, unless you actually go in with that open heart, how can you expect to change anything? It reminds me of the days of Davy Crockett and some of the people who forged the frontier, and some of the Puritans, the churchgoers who were in those first groups, and they used to always leave their door open to their log cabins. And the local people would come in and hack them to death. And then over a period of time, they stopped coming in and hacking them to death and used to sit round and talk to them. So those who gave their lives made it possible for the rest of the community in the years that then came afterwards to actually live peaceably. The difference is with artificial intelligence, it is not divine. Now that's a big question that we need to be clear on. Artificial intelligence was not created in the divine sense. You cannot send love in a beneficial way to something that is artificial intelligence. What I would ask you is this: if you have a chess computer, or your motor car, which has a computer, or your computer on the television, on your table at home, try and send it love and see what response you get. So if you're playing a game against a chess computer, try and send it love. It's not going to work because there isn't anything divine connected to it. I remember one person saying to me, can't we just send love to the CERN Hadron Collider? Saying no, but you could probably send love to the people who are operating it. So we have to be very, very careful. I'm respecting I'm not being cross here. I'm respecting the questioner because the questioner has come into the field through the spiritual side, through understanding that the trees, that the rocks, that the plants can communicate. The questioner has actually understood that, and then her world has been added onto by the understanding that there are external forces to the planet Earth, and then the questioner is saying, well, I wish to treat these people in the same way as I treat the rocks and the trees and the animals. And that seems perfectly correct and right. The difficulty we have is that we don't, as a human race, have an awful lot of time. Unlike those early pioneers, if we leave the door open and we all get murdered in our beds, we don't have the time to develop and work over many generations to make that friendship, if you like. We have to evolve quickly now. We have to decide who is here to help us, who is not bothered either way, and who is working against us. We should be able to forgive, but that doesn't mean that we, you know, throw our weapons down and say, that's fine, you know, you want to do what you want to do, that's fine, you can do that to me. I don't subscribe to that view. I actually believe that if something is right and good, it's worth, you know, defending. But I do understand the argument here, and it's very painful for me actually to give the view I've given. But I've come to that because I do not believe anybody should give away their sovereignty and be tricked. You think of the Western Europeans who landed 400 years ago on a South Sea island and presented a pot full of worthless glass beads and said to the leader of the village, give us all your island and you can have this lovely, lovely pot of glass beads. The person in that island, probably no one had ever been murdered. There was no lying, there was no cheating. They had a small community and they trusted everyone. And when these white Europeans arrived, they treated them as their own. And oh dear me, didn't they learn how trickery and nasty some of these Europeans could be to them. But by then it was too late. They'd been enslaved and destroyed. Now when I do the radio show, I've always spoken about the human race and how it has to evolve and we have to be careful. And ultimately, I've always said to people, trust yourself. If you think something is right or wrong, do it, because then you have to stand by your own decisions. So I heartily respect the questioner, but I've put my side on. So, you know, I've had my tuppence worth, as we say in Great Britain, and the audience will listen, and hopefully they'll understand that both myself and the questioner have very good elements. So thank you for that.
This is another very interesting question. This is Sky from Sky. I have noticed the answers. You just have to have faith, hope in things that will work out, that things will work out, coming to me lately. It has made me question, what exactly does everyone have faith or hope in? It seems that everyone is waiting for some saviour on the outside of them, something other than themselves, that is going to do something or change something to make it all better, the human condition that is, and that then they can get back to life as they know it. Obviously, since it is hitting an off key in me, it is something I need to deal with inside also. So question is, how do we, those of us looking for an outer savior in some form, turn that faith or hope into an inner trust, and what do we focus that intention on? I have been using the higher DNA that you have described in past discussions as the term higher self, that finding trust in that seems a bit elusive except in meditation, and difficult for those that haven't found the saviour inside yet. I see we could go down the rabbit hole on this subject, but just looking for a direction and some guidelines on this one. Trusting in one's inner saviour and moving that out into the world.
Wow. See? I said that was a good question.
See, that question was too long. So we have to be consistent.
All right, here's a go. I will summarize the question with the middle.
No, I've got it. It's okay, JP. Yeah. I've got it. Yeah. But I just wanted to be consistent here, and you know, we will try and keep everyone trying to keep.
All right, these are paragraphs. They're all paragraphs.
Right. It goes back to sovereignty, and it's about the belief in what you think is right and the values that you have. And often through history, we have as a people, that's throughout the Western world, but not exclusively so, we've been led to believe that a strong man can sometimes be a strong woman, but generally a strong man is required to do the job. And we are pre-programmed to vote or elect for an individual to do what we want them to do. Never mind the fact that they go and do something completely different, and we seem to forget that. You only have to look at North America. Every few years, it's either the Democrats or the Republicans. Might be a bit different now, but nevertheless, Democrats, Republicans, and there's a great, huge excitement, and a president is elected, and then it all falls down. And then there's another huge excitement and another president is elected and it all falls down. And nobody seems to remember that the last three or four elections, this is just a pattern they're in. So what we'll have to do is to say that we shouldn't expect somebody else to come and put it right for us. The reason is that what's right for us may not be right for that person who we've elevated onto this podium to do it, because 9 times out of 10 they will be multi-millionaires themselves. They will have been groomed for the job ever since they were 3 or 4 years old. They will only ever meet and mix with people who have great wealth and power. So why would they do something to save us? Now, when you ask yourselves these questions, then you begin to understand that the sort of people that have been reaching the top of the ladder are reaching the top of the ladder simply because they will maintain the status quo. If I, and I'm not, but if I was an elite person running the world and I don't want my face in the media because I'm too busy making trillions of dollars, so we'll have an election and we'll have a president because I don't mind him being a middleman because I control him. Because I'll call him maybe, don't know, twice or three times a year and tell him what he can and can't do. That president, no matter how much he or she really cares about the people, can't do it unless they're JFK and then they get a bullet in their head. So we need to understand that nobody externally is going to come and put it right for us. We have to do it. And the second question was, how do we do that? We have to stop being excited about strong-armed men. We have to stop being excited about people who come and promise the earth. We have to stop giving them their power. It's a nasty name, but we'll look at Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler only got to power because people gave him that power. Through a combination of violence and democracy, he and his followers achieved nearly total power in a country because 45 or 50 million people let him do that. And although it's probably very unsavory to say it, it's a fact that most of those people were quite happy with Adolf Hitler as long as things were ticking along nicely. And as soon as things weren't ticking along nicely, no, they weren't Nazis. And what I'm saying to you is that people have been programmed from birth to look and seek for a leader to do something. And the problem is that you're going to need some people who can wield power, and I'm using the word deliberately, to make changes, but are above corruption. Because at the moment, it seems to me that most of the people in all of the governments who wield power have been corrupted by that. So joining the strands is not, it's not what you need to do in this case. It's about actually understanding that the system that we have, certainly in the Western world and probably all over the planet, is not designed to produce anybody who is going to come and save you. It is only designed to produce people that will maintain the status quo or steal more from you to give to them and their friends. Once ordinary people who are obviously, you know, not listening to the show, unfortunately, once they understand that, then they will say the whole system is corrupt. The whole way of identifying leaders is corrupt. So you have the political system. The political system is just merely a ladder to maintain the control system. We need to actually come to a point where you don't have shareholders. Terrible, because many people listening to this show might have shares. But when you divide and rule, then you are going to create people who say, I'm better than you, I've got more money than you, I've got more of this, I've got more of that. And until we can get away from that, and we can get away from the money side of it, we will always be looking for somebody who's going to protect my interests. So I believe in this, therefore I want someone to protect me there. I believe in that, so I'm going to want someone there. And until we can have someone who says, actually, it's all trash. It's all rubbish. We need to start again from the beginning. What the Western media did not report was when the people of Iceland literally threw out, physically manhandled out their parliament, their constitution, part of it was written on Facebook, because they wanted as many people as possible to contribute. Now, you wouldn't ever in Great Britain or America or Canada or Australia have a constitution written on Facebook, because that's not how we do it. We might get people write things on there that we don't want. That's what I mean. You need to remove people from power who have that mindset. And you need to have a system where equality and truth and love and understanding is much more important than how much money are you going to give me. So a really good question. And I was in danger of going on too long. So thank you.
No, it's very good and impassioned. So, you know, get you going. That's what, you know, this is what everybody's listening for, right? So, now here is from Maria Z, member of the CC group. Jin and Yusuf Copper, DJ Jin. Dear Simon, thank you for all the valuable information and the knowledge that you provide. My question is, in order to block the jinn, has the use of pure copper equivalent result and can be used as a substitute instead of the iron? Thank you.
That's a clever question, because I think the person may actually have more knowledge than they are letting out on. I don't believe people try and trick me or try and catch me out. I just think that they have a lot of knowledge and they genuinely want an answer. Copper works providing it has a mantra on it. So copper as a metal on its own has absolutely no effect whatsoever. But if it has the correct mantra or spell, as we would say in the Western world, but that's not really the right terminology here, if it has the right incarnation, if it has the right mantra, then it can be used to banish jinn, yes. But iron as a metal needs no symbols with it. It needs the energy connection of the wielder, the person who is using the iron to command the jinn to leave. Iron on itself is a very, very useful device for pushing a jinn away. Copper on its own does nothing. So that's my answer.
So the iron is a repellent. They don't like iron. Is that right?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying? So I remember you saying something about get the biggest piece of iron you've got. And I'm thinking, what about it? I got some kitchen weights, you know, like.
Yeah. Absolutely. Kitchen weights, fantastic. All right. Listen, I'll answer your question, JP. A long time ago on this planet, science and magic were one. There was no, division. Science was magic and magic was science. And then, some very gifted people started to do drawings like Leonardo da Vinci and others, you know, cogs and wheels and pulleys. And the human consciousness said, I can understand that. You pull on this rope and this wheel turns, and when that wheel turns, it makes this cog move. Suddenly that became science. That led to the cell phone, the mobile phone, and the motor car, etc. But alchemy and other things that are healing, that was suddenly consigned to magic, and that took a dive underground. The creatures that we call jinn belong to this history of this planet before this split, before science became separate from magic. So they operate, although time moves forward in the sense that we would understand it on this planet, these creatures are connected to a time when magic was science. And iron holds magic. That's why you won't find any jinn whenever a meteorite, there are two sorts of meteorite, there's what you call a stony iron, which only contains a small amount of iron, and there's what's called an iron meteorite, which is almost pure iron. When a pure iron meteorite falls, the disruption to any jinns around is quite phenomenal. So iron itself is a very powerful deflector of jinn energy, but when somebody who has both the right and the strength to wield the iron combines with it, then they have the power, for good or ill, to command the jinn. And the actual correct term is to command the jinn. So when I'm working with clients who have placed iron under their bed or wherever it might be necessary, then I will energetically connect with that iron, and so that jinn is then gone, removed. And just as in the same way, though, but in reverse order, King Solomon used an iron ring to force jinn energy to help speed up the building of his Holy of Holies, the King Solomon's temple. So it's understood in law and magic, and it's because it's very powerful that you will very rarely see any soap opera, documentary, television show talk about iron, because they don't want ordinary, as they see it, ordinary people having the knowledge, because many bad elite people use jinn to control good people. And if you were to publicly announce that iron was a good defense, then they would lose the control of some of their people. That's why it's not ever talked about. So that's why I use every opportunity I can, and that's why I try and help people, because many elite magicians, black magicians, most black magicians have a jinn inside them. That's actually what's required, because the black magician can't conjure in the same way without that that very, very strange energy inside them. But that's another story. So that's my answer, and it was a good question. Thank you.
Wow. So yeah, I'm going to go and get an iron spike now. I got a 6 foot. Well, no, it's a 4 foot iron spike that I use for planting.
It has to be iron. It can't be any other metal.
So steel is iron, or steel is steel?
That's a good question. If you were to talk to a man or a woman who smelted metals, you could, if you allowed yourself, get into a long argument that steel is iron. Now, what I'm looking for when I work with my clients is iron, which is a metal with a lot of impurities. Steel could be argued as being iron, but with the impurities removed. It must be iron, because iron is the metal that rusts readily. If you think about the term sword and sorcery, The word sword, you coordinate it with dragons and magic, etc. But it wasn't the sword that was important. It was the fact the sword was made of iron. And as soon as steel was invented and swords were made of steel, all of those magic stories just disappeared. So it's, the sword is seen as very, very magically important, but only because it was made of iron. So that's another little thing there.
So Vanessa's saying a cast iron frying pan might work then.
Right, okay.
Crusades. Right, can you gin the crusades? And what about an auger? That's got a big iron plate.
Right, well that, okay, two things there. First of all, yes, it would work, but the Remember, I've told everyone that it's about the concept in these creatures' minds about magic. And so the man working on a forge, smelting iron, banging it with a hammer, that iron is the most powerful. And I say to people, if you can get your hand on a horseshoe that's made of iron, that is the most powerful thing. So King Solomon commanded jinn with a ring that was hand-forged in a forge, obviously. That's the most powerful thing. Then you then talked about frying pans and ovens. The important thing is where we place the metal. You need a piece of iron, and then you need to place it in key locations. So having something in the kitchen might not actually be the key location. So anyway, yeah, that's it's good, isn't it?
Oh, wow, that's very fascinating information. And so this is interesting because you're answering some of the people's questions ahead. So I'm not asking them, but Rick then says, do reptiloids have swords in their culture? Yes. Cross-checking to make sense of a memory, he says.
Yes, they do. More than one. Right, then the United States Navy have an agreement with a group called the Raptors, who use swords. The group that I have a connection to use swords, but not for fighting, but only for ceremonial purposes. And as a young boy, all human children who are initiated into the reptilian culture at a high level have to undergo a test. And I found one other person who'd undergone the same test as me. And without any, I hadn't gone on the internet or anything with this. So they were genuine. You won't find it in a book. You won't find it anywhere. You only know about it because you do it. So it was amazing to find somebody. Unfortunately, they failed, or fortunately, depending how you look at it. What happens is you're given a large sword, a very real sword. Excuse me. And you stand, and your legs apart slightly, and you hold the handle, and you put the blade on the ground, and then you can use 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, it doesn't matter, that doesn't matter, swings, and you literally throw the sword up in the air so it spins. So it's maybe 7-8 feet gone up in the air, depending on how big the sword is. It may only be 5 foot if it's very heavy. But it's describing arcs, it's spinning. Now what you have to do is stand there and catch it by the hilt. The natural human reaction is to run, or move out of the way. If you move out of the way and let the sword hit the ground, you're out of the program. If you attempt to catch it by the hilt and you fail, you're out of the program. And all human children who are destined for a certain route have to undergo that. Now, I met somebody, I'm not going to say who their name was, because that's, I don't have permission to do that. And they, because I actually said to this person, and I quote, have you ever done the sword ritual? To which he said yes. And I thought, well, this will be interesting then. I won't give anything away. And he then proceeded to tell me that he dropped it. And the shame and the disgrace was terrible. And he was out of the program. So he was genuine. His experiences were genuine. I caught my sword, so I would then go on to the next stage. So in some groups of reptilians, the sword has a very huge symbolic meaning. If you think in Great Britain's history, King Arthur and the sword in the stone. If you think about the symbol for a country in Great Britain, the country's called Wales, it has a red dragon. If you think of the Sarmatians, who were a very warlike people, they had the Draco standard. So we associate swords and dragons, and we think about King George slaying the dragon. So swords are very important to reptilian cultures. Some use them actually for fighting, and some use them just for ceremonial purposes. So thank you for the question.
From Sesima. Hello, Simon and JP. When I was around 5, I had a visit, during which I thought it was my sleep. The lights of my bedroom went on and the door opened. I saw Christ come in and looked at him and at the image my father left. That's how I knew it was Christ. He called me with his hand, but I never saw his lips move. I moved my head as saying no, and he called me again, and I said no, because if my mother woke up, she would yell at me. and she said she wouldn't wake up. Defiant, I jumped twice on my bed and then down and came to him and he picked me up. When I woke up, my mother screamed because she found blood on my pillow, but there was no wound on me she could find. Who or what was this being? Thank you for sharing your knowledge.
Right. I always think I've got some form of responsibility, whether it's right or not. It's not my place to take away someone's belief system. I can challenge it and get people to start to do their own research, but I've never literally gone on a head-to-head course with somebody like that. I would be very, very surprised, and I'm not being rude, I'm very, very surprised if Jesus Christ had the chart at the time to come and visit you. It is possible. And if you had the soul of Mary or someone that particular individual had that connection with, then I won't rule that out. What is more likely is that somebody was masquerading as Jesus, specifically done when a family is very religious or an individual has just learned about Jesus. I would ask the question about the blood, whether you'd had a nosebleed. You looked for any physical wounds on your body, or your mother looked for any wounds. There was none, but there was blood potentially on your pillow. I would suggest you had a nosebleed. I would suggest that you'd have a screen memory, and maybe something had been done to your nose. Now, I won't disagree that coordinated with somebody leaving the planet. That is often the case. Some entities have the ability to map the future, and how useful to implant an incredibly strong image if I was to send something to a person at a moment when I knew that one of their loved ones was going to pass away. So it's manipulating time and it's using timelines. So I would suggest that it wasn't Jesus, it was somebody who appeared to be Jesus. If you had a bleed, I would be interested if you checked to see if you had it from the nose. And I would also be interested in what other experiences you had from that. So, yeah, that's a very interesting one. I'm being careful and cautious. I'm not trying to be aggressive, but I personally don't think that Jesus had the time to come and visit you on that night. Thank you.
From Anne Ishikawa. We all have a bit of reptilian DNA. But is it true that 15% of the global population has a dash of alien DNA that prevents them from being mind-controlled via Earth-based technologies? If true, why? Thank you for all you do, Simon and JP. Love.
That's a far more complicated question than you perhaps appreciate, or maybe you do appreciate it, and that's why you've asked it. First of all, as probably the first white man to go public and say that the majority of black people cannot be controlled by mind control of planet entities, which makes them stronger, actually. But having alien DNA or alien makeup doesn't mean that you are free from mind control. Sometimes it's actually it's the worst, because if you have a connection to a particular dimension or a certain energy, I call it the back door. So somebody who's a black magician and has had many past lives in Venice as a black magician working for the Vatican and then incarnates on this planet again and is not a black magician, they will be drawn to the occult. They don't know why, but they're just drawn to the occult. And before they know it, they're sucked in. And so they may have off-planet makeup to them, but it was no defense. Where it is a defense is when you have such a proportion of off-planet makeup that your psychic abilities exceed those of the people who wish to do you harm. In other words, you have out-evolved through either artificial means or through unfair means, but you've out-evolved the people on the planet. I've always said that a true reptilian, a true reptile, knows what you are thinking before you're consciously aware of it. And I'll give you an example. Let's say you were in a tunnel. Doesn't matter where it is, you're in a tunnel, and your immediate thought is to run before the electronic signals from your brain go to the muscles or the nerves in your leg to tell you to run. That reptilian will already know you're going to run. And here's perhaps something that's more interesting. A genuine experiencer once said to me, "I'm a bit worried sometimes, Simon, because I'm in the kitchen cooking, preparing food, and I'll have a knife. And I know these entities come and visit me when I'm in the kitchen. I'm really worried that sometimes they'll see that I've got a knife in my hand and that I could do them harm." And I said to her, "You have no reason to worry at all, because they are reading your mind and they'll know your intent before you've even decided it." So they'll know that you don't intend to use that knife for anything other than chopping vegetables. So it's understanding that your best defense against a negative force is to completely reject it and say, "You have no power over me. I'm aware of who and what you are. I don't allow you to come within my space. I don't allow you to invade my mind." Whatever agreement may have been made in the past, I repudiate that agreement now. So I'd say to people, if you have something that's negative that's bothering you, then just get rid of it. And if you believe strongly enough, you will get rid of it. So that was a good question. Thank you.
So, Adam Alexander, I have a couple of questions, but I'm going to ask one of them. I would like to know what your views are on archangels, and if you communicate with them, and if you believe that archangels may incarnate as a human in order to assist with the awakening.
Well, we are taught, if that's the right word, indoctrinated is probably a better word, we're taught that Satan, Lucifer, was a fallen angel. You know, we were actually taught that through the Bible, that he was a good person who was an angel who then decided to be a bad person. So that's the religious take on it. I actually think that there are beings from what we could call the angelic realm. I actually think that there are beings who are very high dimension, above the normal 6th, 7th, 8th type dimension, very high, whose physical form is made or composed of sound wave energy and photons, light wave energy. And they are so evolved that they are unaffected by organic materials around them. And they have only reached that high level because they have taken the right path. If you don't take the right path, you don't evolve. It's like these guys in the fourth dimension, they've been there a very long time and they have every danger of never getting out of that dead end. But if you're up in the 11th and higher dimensions, that's because you have passed every test. So you might be so full of understanding that you understand nearly everything, and you come here because you wish to help and guide. And so some people will see these beings and, you know, whether we call them angels or archangels, that's how we might refer to them. I don't know whether they are angels in the sense of the word, but I do know that such beings exist, and I do know such beings are just good. And I wish we could see more of them. So yeah, that's my answer.
Thanks. Right, now here we go. Da, 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 da. All right. Emerald tablets from Myra. Saw a video that we do not have the real information on the emerald tablets, that there are 6 of them and that Nazis got a hold of them, I think 2 of them. Do you know which is on the 6 emerald tablets? And how many do you have to take before tea?
Well, it'll take you to the Emerald City, won't it?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Right. There are a number of artifacts on the planet and off the planet. And six is the number. And when certain artifacts are placed together in a pattern, doesn't have to be a circle, in the correct order, they then produce a sound or they produce a resonance or a frequency which then unlocks something else which is out of human eyesight. Adolf Hitler wanted to obtain as many of these treasures as he could, simply because he understood a little. He understood enough to know that many of these items had been hidden around the Earth precisely to prevent people putting them together in the correct pattern and opening things or altering things. I won't specifically talk about the Emerald Tablets, but there are a number of organizations on the planet to this day. Some are hell-bent on obtaining such items and keeping them in their private museums. And other organizations are just as determined to ensure that these guys don't get them. Even so, that some military organizations have set up squads, and one squad goes out to try and recover them and the other squad goes out to try and prevent them to being discovered. Some of these materials were deliberately placed here in the hope that people would find them. Other materials were stolen or lost. And being humans, we love a quiz. We love a challenge. And so you find one piece of the jigsaw, you think you understand it, and it leads you to the second piece and the third piece. Are you being led there to develop and put all these pieces of the jigsaw together and unwittingly bring about your own demise? Or are you genuinely being like Sherlock Holmes and through free will, just investigating what lies out there? So my own concern with many of these objects is they have black magic attached to them. The listener talked about the Nazis. One of the main reasons that Adolf Hitler invaded Austria was because he wanted to get the Spear of Destiny, which wasn't in a museum, actually. It was kept in a church, strung up from the ceiling. It's my belief that the Spear of Destiny as a special object actually was possessed, and it might be a surprise to some people to understand that objects can be possessed. Objects that are not organic can still have a resonance about them, which is a home to a non-corporeal bodied creature. And I believe that the Spear of Destiny did have an entity to it, and that entity then left the Spear of Destiny and went into Adolf Hitler. So many objects that we are excited about, think about Raiders of the Lost Ark, and many, many stories where the hero goes around to collect things. They contain rather negative aspects to them, although then in themselves they may actually not be harmful, but something has attached itself because it expects a human to come and find it. Adolf Hitler was always supposed to find the Spear of Destiny as a destitute painter around the time of the First World War, before the First War and just after. He was fascinated by the occult. We've got 3 or 4 minutes. Let's just talk very, very quickly about Hitler, because the questioner has legitimately, I can legitimately talk about it because the questioner has put it in. It is interesting and it is part of our subject, because at the end of the First World War, Adolf Hitler allegedly became blind through a gas attack. But he did not become blind through a gas attack. The technical term, or the medical term, is historic blindness. Hysterical blindness. Hitler believed he was blind, therefore he became blind. Remember that Adolf Hitler was the illegitimate son of one of the Rothschilds, and he was therefore always going to be protected. He was a number, 1919, was 1919, he and a few others were sent from Germany to Britain to undergo some hypnosis. This was supposed to cure his hysterical blindness, because doctors knew he wasn't blind, but he believed he was. But I believe that he went through a form of mind control, which basically was a program which is, I am the savior, made a demigod out of him, and he was then connected with black magic from that point. So any sacred object that he then went, because he sent expeditions to Tibet, he sent expeditions to the Hollow Earth, anywhere and everywhere where there could be a sacred object, he went to collect it. Now, was that he collecting it, or was it the entity that possessed him? So I'm always very cautious about objects, and sometimes people bring me objects and I won't touch them. I'll have a jolly good look with my third eye, first of all, before I will physically handle it. So it's a really fascinating question. Thank you for that.
Absolutely. So, right. So we're kind of really near the end. Simon, are you going to be doing readings again? This is another question.
Yes. What's happened is I've got 100 people now who have emailed. I have got somebody who is now going to coordinate starting this Monday. I beg your pardon, not this Monday, a week Monday, so not tomorrow, but a week tomorrow, who's going to be coordinating and is going to be emailing people with a slot, a time, and a date. So now we've got the 100, that's what we're going to be doing. And then what we'll do is we'll clear those and then we'll reopen again. So I don't want to get in a situation where I ever again hugely oversubscribed. So I have got someone to help me now. And emails will be going out in a week Monday, booking people.
Good, good. Excellent. So, Simon Parks, your second Sunday, it's been a little more relaxed, a little less intense than the last time, which is...
Do you know why that is? Because I've got 2 shows a month now, therefore I don't feel I have to rattle off my answers and push it.
That's right.
I've got longer to take my time over it.
That's good. So, and with that, a little drum roll. Good night.
Connecting consciousness.
Wolf Spirit Radio.